Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You are listening to Sci-Fi Wire's 22 Days of Marvel. On today's episode, we're talking about Doctor Strange, so stay tuned. Hey everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's 22 Days of Marvel podcast. I'm today's moderator, Alexis Loynez. On this podcast, we are counting down to the release of Avengers Endgame. Yep, it's coming up, and we are revisiting all the movies of the Marvel Cinematic Universe one day at a time. So each day, we are going to tackle a different movie, we explore the plot, call out the best scenes and dialogue, and most important, track all the connections across these 22 movies and what clues give us a hint to what happens in Avengers Endgame. And finally, what makes this podcast most interesting? Well, it's our hosts. We're all massive fans of the MCU at Sci-Fi Wire, so this podcast will be hosted by a rotating cast of Sci-Fi Wire staff. Some you've heard before, and some you didn't. So here's your chance to meet them. We're going to geek out from the inner circle, from Wire HQ, straight to the podcast platform of your choice. So let's jump right in with today's co-hosts. We have Adam Swiderski and Megan Dineen.
Hello. Alexis, you're right. I am the most interesting.
You are absolutely
part of this podcast. I've decided to adopt a Stephen Strange arrogance for this podcast.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
Do you have the goatee too?
I've come to bargain. That's all I'm going to say. Alexis.
Dormammu's very happy.
I've come to bargain.
Well, thanks for joining us. Before we dive in here, we're going to do a bit of a breakdown and stuff. We wanted to introduce everybody to our handy little AI. Some of you have met him before if you listen to our podcast. For those who haven't, meet Warvis.
Alexis, hello. I've come to bargain. As we come to the close of all of these MCU podcasts, I'm coming to realize that I will no longer have a purpose at the conclusion of this podcast reign. So I think I'm having a little bit of an existential crisis. Let's make a deal.
I hope you can all hear the sound of my side eye at Warvis. I have a very antagonistic relationship with Warvis.
Look, Adam, just because I don't reciprocate your obvious crush on me doesn't mean you have to make it weird, all right? We can still be cool.
Well, thank you, Warvis. So Warvis is going to give us a bit of a recap of where we are in the MCU. As we know, Doctor Strange comes in at Phase 3. A lot of stuff have come before this, setting up to ultimately what will be Endgame for the end of Phase 3. So Warvis, take it away.
Doctor Strange is the second MCU movie in Phase 3, coming right after Captain America: Civil War and directly before Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Doctor Strange really exists independently from the movie that preceded it, Captain America: Civil War, and really serves as an origin story for Doctor Strange. What should really be tracked is that the MCU brought magic as science into the fold with Thor and other mystical movies. Doctor Strange continues that theme.
I guess that gets us all caught up on stuff, so let's just go dive into the movie here.
I have a question for you guys.
Shoot.
What if Iron Man, but magic?
Oh, I see what you did there.
You see what I did there?
I see what you did there.
We're done with the plot summary.
We
can move on.
I disagree, though, because I feel like this movie's got more than that.
Hey, I love this movie. By the way, I'm going on record as saying that right off the bat. I love Doctor Strange. All right, moving on.
Okay, I'm going to actually one-up you there. I'm going to say this is my favorite MCU movie.
There you go.
Ooh,
and I'm okay with that.
This is a top one for me, personally.
It's amazing.
I really enjoy it. I mean, my key note here is Inception shit. Like, this movie is like Inception with magic, and I love it.
It's one of the more visually, before Thor Ragnarok, one of the more visually bananas movies of the MCU canon.
It's a kaleidoscope.
This movie is absolutely a kaleidoscope, and I think that Marvel should give Dramamine to everybody.
Yes.
When watching this. Like,
no.
Your Blu-ray
if
should
you
come with Dramamine.
Then maybe You shouldn't be watching Doctor Strange.
Look, Adam, You're not strange enough. As we get older, we get a little bit of emotion sensitivity. I saw this movie in 3D. I got a little nauseous, I won't lie. So, like, you know, just some of us can't hack it.
You just need to be more in touch with your inner sorcerer.
You're right. I've been working on that for a while. I got to put aside my ego.
That's
what I need to do.
So before we jump into the plot here, I just wanted to ask, what did everyone think when they first found out that this was going to be the next MCU film, that this was the next superhero they were going to tackle?
I was into it. I love Doctor Strange. This is the time when Marvel stopped trying to put the restraints on some of the imaginative imagery and some of the wackier stuff that's in the MCU, because this is the first real delve into the magic side. And that's great. I'm glad they were like, you know what? Yeah, there's mirror dimensions and crazy cloaks and things like that. And it's just cool. We don't have to explain it. We don't have to justify it. It's just there. And you know,
people can be along for the ride.
Right. And we saw that continue as they went on with Ragnarok, et cetera. So, you know, this was, I think, one of the first big forays where they just went for it. And it didn't matter how wacky the source material was.
Yeah, for me, you know, admittedly, coming into the MCU, I did not follow the right progression of movies is how I've watched them. And so I've always been a fan of these standalone character movies where I don't need to know a lot about the rest of the world. Mind you, if I do, if I'm a fan of the comics or have followed the movies, there's Easter eggs and there's things that link to other places. But I could enjoy this movie in and of itself, very much like how you could do with Iron Man, Captain Marvel, Ant-Man, I think, does this, Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's very funny. I'm kind of this island where I love these single character stories because it's just like, oh, you can just dive in. You don't need this huge commitment of everything that has come before it.
But you also felt by this point the MCU kind of had the chutzpah to say, you know what, we can throw you our weirder stuff. You guys are going to get it. You guys are going to eat it up.
Oh, I'm all about the weird. Don't get me wrong. I love me some, you know, Captain America fighter, you know, pretty straightforward story of a guy here to bring down Nazis. But at the end of the day, I love some weird stuff.
Well, you can say that this is Marvel's Stranger
thing. Oh, I see what you did there.
So let's kick it off here, Adam. So it starts off with some really trippy visuals. I mean, this thing doesn't pull any punches right off the gate.
We jump right into the mirror dimension, you know, and I know that the Inception was the big touchstone everyone always talked about, because that's where we most recently had these really dazzling images of cities folding in on themselves. But I, you know, as much as there is some element of that, I think it really establishes right off the bat its own character visually. And I appreciated that for sure.
And we get that mirror dimension right in the opening.
Yep.
We start off in a courtyard. It's kind of ominous. We see some figures entering some ancient tavern. Lo and behold, there is a librarian holding down the fort, and whoops, he loses his head.
Oh, man. That was rough. Made a little clink when it landed in the bucket.
Just the perils of the job, huh?
Yeah, apparently. I didn't know being a librarian was so dangerous.
Apparently it is. But this kind of gets us into just, you know, a no-holds-barred opening into what this mirror dimension is.
Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
Sorry, I love her.
Absolutely.
I hear her voice. I'm like, yes.
Well, I don't know if this is the time to address this, but this was a very controversial thing, you know.
What was controversial about
it? Tilda Swinton was cast as the Ancient One.
Oh, okay. Because, like, racially?
Yeah,
that she was
here's
cast
the issue.
Ancient
is that the Ancient One, these comics are very old. And the Ancient One in the original comics is very much an Asian caricature. It's like, you know, ancient wise man with long beard. It's just really, to put it up that way would have been problematic in the modern era. But to a lot of people, putting a white person in that role was problematic in an entirely different way. And there was just a lot of drung and sturm in the internet.
There really
this.
Was. Yeah. And we will definitely be tackling that later.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to get into
it. No, I think the big thing here was that they tried to gender flip it.
Yeah.
We know, and that in itself is admirable, but we do get to meet the Ancient One in this opening, because she is chasing this band of folks who seem to have torn out a page from a very sacred book. And they head out into the streets of London. And then suddenly we see the streets turn to some kind of an Escher-esque kind of painting. Things are folding upon themselves and things are kind of like going haywire and bananas. And she is unable to stop them. And that sort of sets the tone.
And this is where we first meet, and I am hoping I say his name, Caecilius?
Caecilius.
There you go. I've written it out phonetically in my notes because I'm never going to be able to pronounce it otherwise.
And that is where we meet him, mm-hmm. and where we pretty much find out that he's on the hunt for something, and he's gotten it. So that right off the bat sort of tells us what we are in for. It's a mind trip. You know, it's psychedelic. Things are going to be going completely upside down.
And Mads Mikkelsen had a big genre year in 2016, because in addition to this, he was also in Rogue One, which came out later in the year.
Very true. And I think what's important here is we set up that the Ancient One and Caecilius know each other, because he makes that comment to her in that scene where he's like, he calls her a hypocrite because she's using what we later learn is magic that she has forbidden from other people. But I think that's an important part to be like, okay, there is a pre-established relationship here.
There is
here.
A backstory going on here. Absolutely. Well, from that, we jump to our main character here and in all of his amazing, arrogant, cocky bravado.
Have you ever seen Dennis Leary talk about the movie The Doors?
No.
He's like, I can't believe we made a whole movie about this. You could tell the story of Jim Morrison like this. I'm drunk, I'm nobody, I'm drunk, I'm famous, I'm drunk, I'm dead. And so that's what I feel like it is with Doctor Strange. It's like, I'm a jerk, then I'm hurt, now I'm not. You know, it's like, this the entire first half of this movie is, I'm a brilliant jerk. That's all you need to know about Doctor Strange.
That was probably on Benedict Cumberbatch's script. You know, I'm a drunk, I'm blah, blah,
you're
blah,
a
blah.
Jerk. And you're brilliant.
End of scene.
That's it.
Yes. Well, he's basically,
do your thing.
He's House, right? Like, if you think about it, like, he's basically playing that same character.
He's like Hyper House.
No, he totally Uber is. House. He's Hyper House, and then also, like,
he's like House with a second story.
Yeah. Look at that. Who knew Adam had the jokes?
Adam brings down to House.
I got all the jokes.
But yeah, I mean, we meet him in kind of, it's weird. It's like an endearing way. You're like, okay, I'm kind of into this, but then you can tell he's, like, cocky right as you get into it. When he's guessing what year the album came out, and he's like, check Wikipedia, my friend. Right. And you're just like,
we don't have time for that.
You can't do it freehand.
I can and I will.
I was like, okay, I kind of resonate with this guy, but at the same time, like, I think he might be a dick.
I will say, as much as I love me some Cumberbatch, it doesn't quite work as endearingly as RDJ with Tony Stark and
See,
Iron Man.
I disagree.
Really? You
I
think actually, he's yeah. more endearing?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Because to me, Tony Stark is like, look, I get it. And he's smart and intelligent. But there's something about his entitlement of coming from money that really bothers me. That where I feel like Doctor Strange's entitlement comes from a place of, I earned this. Like, I climbed my way up through my MD and my PhD to be here.
And of skills that I can actually, like, heal a guy and do something you guys can't.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess there's something about that I find slightly more tolerable than I do with Tony Stark.
And I think it's like, it's interesting because you're talking about story stuff, which is 100% true. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it boils down to the actors, right?
Yeah.
I love Benedict Cumberbatch. I think he was great in this role. But it's just with Robert Downey Jr. just has so much charisma.
Oh, yeah.
That even when he's being a total asshole, you know, you're just like, he's funny. So anyway.
Well, there's room for both. And they do end up together in Infinity War in a very pivotal scene later on. So overall, I would say a good introduction of another compelling actor into the
MCU. Saving lives, pulling bullets out of brains. Very cool.
Absolutely. And he knows it.
Yeah.
And he is good. Well, from there, so we know he's good. We know he's cocky. He is, at this point, getting ready for a gala, a very pivotal scene.
I like to say gala. I don't know why. I feel like it sounds gala. More regal. It's going to a gala. I don't know.
The Met Gala.
Yeah.
Well, Megan, tell us what happens in this scene.
This scene, so rewatching this, it reminded me how, like, brutal that scene is. So, you know, he's in the car and he's very, very egotistically taking a phone call and driving around other cars. And you know something bad is going to happen because you see him kind of weaving in and out. And lo and behold, in his fancy sports car, he goes flipping over that mountain. And you watch that slow-mo scene where his hands get crushed and the car goes in. And I audibly was like, oh, God, no, not the hands. All the things but the hands. And it just, it's... It's always good. You see that downfall of that character immediately. So you're like, okay, I know why we're here. Like, I get why what we're about to do. And it's going to be this mission to fix these hands. I mean, he goes into that ER and his face is all disoriented. But when he wakes up and sees the pins in his hands.
What did they do?
What did you do?
What
oh my
did you
God.
Do?
Yes, because he's looking at that other doctor that he has almost no respect for. And I look at that guy and think of Boardwalk Empire the whole time.
And
not because he's in Boardwalk Empire, but just because.
Oh, well, no, he is
no,
in Boardwalk.
I know, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was like, wait, he is in Boardwalk Empire.
I just thought it would be funny if you were like, man, I think of Boardwalk Empire.
This guy just makes me think of the 1920s.
Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, no, and like you just see that moment of recognition. It's crazy. Even in the car flip, I feel like they give you a beat on his face where he recognizes like, oh, it's all over. Like I'm about to lose everything. And then when he wakes up in that bed and you can just tell he's got all of this rage inside of him because he realizes that like all of everything that he leaned on, his skills are gone, or we think they are. So
it's all in your mind.
That scene is emotional for me though, because it makes me just think about like, what's my thing that, like, if my hand broke, I could no longer perform surgery? What is mine? I don't know that I have a skill that important, but knock on wood.
Well, but it's important in that it meant that much to him. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, everybody's got that. It's like, I play music, and if I suddenly couldn't, I play guitar, if I suddenly couldn't use my fingers in a certain way or whatever, it's like, well, that's a huge chunk of me that's just gone.
Yeah.
And this movie really, I mean, it's not given a huge amount of time, obviously, because we have to move the plot forward and there's a lot going on, but it does, I think, touch really well on what that would be like and what that would do to someone, especially someone who had built themselves up in their own mind as much as Doctor Strange.
It brings a real human element to the story, right? Yeah. Like that idea, again, it's like if I were in these shoes, like what would be the thing that if it were ripped away from me suddenly? So I think it grounds, no matter how magical this movie gets, it really grounds you in the humanity behind this character.
Absolutely. It's a very humbling moment. If this guy does not have the use of his hands, then what is he? What use is he? Well, then we see him trying to undergo a whole bunch of different therapies to try to get things back to where they were, and not quite successful, but a chance encounter happens. And it is when he is meeting with his physical therapist that suddenly he gets turned on to a patient who underwent some kind of a miraculous healing, and that sort of turns him on to this whole other path.
And what's crazy is his ego is what brought him there, because he's being such a dick to the physical therapist. Like, he keeps calling him bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm.
Show me his file.
It take me a while to pull the files from the archive, but if it proves your arrogant ass wrong, worth it.
It's like, well, I guess in a way your ego kind of served you, because it prompted this guy to be like, I will get you the name of this guy.
Well, he did get the name of the guy. That was Pangborn, and he was played by Benjamin Bratt.
Oh, love me some Benjamin Bratt. So good.
I think he's such an underutilized actor. He's so underrated.
Ugh.
And this film is no different.
Yeah, right?
He's like underutilized in this film.
But what is important here is we hear for the first time him utter the word camartage, that Stephen Strange needs to seek out camartage in Nepal. And Adam, why don't you take us what happens next once we get to Nepal?
Well, we see him trying to find camartage and the Ancient One, who is there, and he eventually does. And this is my favorite part of the film, I think. I can't remember off the top of my head. Does she show him the astral plane first, and then he sits outside the door forever, or is it the other way around?
He does. Yeah.
So yeah, the astral plane sequence is.
Open your eye.
Why are you doing this to me?
To show you just how much you don't know. Open your eye.
That is my favorite thing in this movie, and we'll get to our favorite scenes, I guess. But man. Because they went for it. They were just like, here's a bunch of trippy, trippy shit for you to just totally, if you so choose to engage in certain activities, mind-altering activities, this is a great scene for you to watch in that state, because it is out there.
I won't name names, awesome. But somebody on our staff was like, this movie's way better if you're stoned.
Yes, exactly. We don't endorse that kind of activity as an organization.
Of course, we never would.
But, just putting that out there. So, yeah, so she basically, he meets the Ancient One. He's like, oh, yeah, whatever, magic, blah, because he thinks she's got some like kind of treatment, and then she touches him on the forehead, tells him to open his eye, and shoots him into the astral plane and across multiple dimensions, and it's amazing. And, of course, then he's like, teach me, and she's like, no, and he has to go sit outside the door and prove that he's worthy by, going through suffering and stuff like that. So, and then eventually is proven worthy and gets taken in. Mordo sets him up. And here we go. Now it's Doctor Strange learning to become a sorcerer.
Well, I just one note on that. What I love in this scene is where it starts the joke about how he keeps referring to himself as Doctor Strange. Because the Ancient One comes out and goes, Mr. Strange. And he goes, it's Doctor Strange. Yeah. He just goes, well, apparently not anymore.
Yeah.
And then that like becomes the recurring
sick
joke
burn.
Throughout.
The Ancient
so
One,
good.
The Ancient One's got jokes
she
too.
She really did. I was like, oh, snap.
We also meet some pretty important over here. And that would be Mardo.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Little shady little figure there. He's got a hood following.
He's not shady at this point. He seems pretty cool.
His introduction was shady.
No spoilers, Alexis. Yes.
No, no. But he is involved in with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Helps him train, sort of teaches him the ropes, so to speak.
And I really love the way they handled Mordo in this movie. I think for those of us who, you know, were reading the comics for a long time, you know Mordo ends up being, spoilers, in the comics, he's a huge villain. He's one of Doctor Strange's main antagonists, you know, and just the way that you see him in this stage in his life is it's really cool, and I think it was handled really well by Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Is that how you say his name?
I believe so.
It is.
I wasn't even going to try.
Or it's close. I'll say it's close.
I give you the credit.
I got the first name right. I know that for sure.
And credit for Mordo, because he's the one who convinces the Ancient One when she casts him out. He's like, no, you brought me out of this dark place, and I think it's possible for him to do that too. And I'll save this for best lines, but she's got a great line about your inner demons there, that is. Yeah. And I just, that's where I start to realize the relationship that maybe he and Strange are going to build throughout the movie as well.
Yep, some deep stuff going on in here.
Yeah, there really is.
And then we need a montage, because it's time for training.
A montage and a very freezing mountaintop.
Yes, of course.
Apparently.
I skipped ahead, actually. That does come first.
Yeah, you did. We're not there yet.
I just ripped it. Man, this plot, you know, it's all about...
We still got to meet Wong.
That's fair.
Which, by the way, Benedict Wong, is his name actually Wong in the comics, though? Like,
yes.
So, just a weird coincidence.
It's a coincidence. But there are no coincidences.
This is true.
In the universe, apparently. Well, so he's being trained, and his main thing is that, well, if he can't really use his hands, then he can't perform any of the magic, or at least conjure any of the stuff, which apparently proves to be wrong. He gets stranded up at the top of Mount Everest. The Ancient One leaves him there, and, you know, by sheer force of will and necessity, he opens up a portal to get him back into the Kamar-Taj. So his training is coming along, and Megan, you did touch on Wong. So tell us a little bit about Wong.
Oh, well, Wong is the new librarian, post the decapitated librarian we see in our opening scene. But I think what's interesting about him is that he retains a certain amount of power in terms of access to the information in this library. And when he sees how quickly Stephen is absorbing all of this information, he chooses to show him some stuff from the Masters, I guess. Best way to describe it is like the master's aisles that are there. And that's where Stephen, I think, really starts to get into not just, I think, the hardcore magic of what he's doing, but also all of these other things that even Mordor doesn't know about.
Well, and I think the thing that's cool about this part, too, is that, you know, when you meet Strange, he's at the peak of his powers. And we don't know, is that talent? Him? And I think that this shows that it's not, right? Like, yes, he had very good hands and very steady hands, but he got to where he was by being smart, being dogged, and, you know, really applying himself fully to this stuff. And you see it turn this way and then start to work in the magic world as well.
And he has a photographic memory.
Yes.
As he likes to remind everybody. Well, apparently, he discovers that there's a page missing from this book, which was taken by Caecilius. And from there, we see Caecilius and his cohorts in a cathedral. They are now trying to invoke the spell. And this is the moment when I characterize him as getting their gem and the hologram eyes.
Oh, my God. I was going to say he gets his face makeup.
Yeah, that's right.
Little glitter eyes.
That's a good... gem and the hologram eyes.
And Mads
Mikkelsen's
day on set gets infinitely more difficult because he gets that 4 or 5 hours in the makeup chair.
And he can't blink.
That's right.
Oh, my eyes just feel dry thinking about that.
But we also, this is where we see Dormammu for the first time, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. We get a very ominous tease.
Played by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Wait, really?
Yeah. I did not know that.
I did not know that. I mean, I should know that, but I did not know that.
The motion capture for Dormammu's face, because it's like they wanted it to be like, this is the dark side of what Stephen Strange is, you know?
Okay.
There you go. Little known fact.
Look at that. See, I knew I'd learn something new today. Anyway. But yeah, so let's see. I mean, we see that area where Caecilius gets that power.
The dark dimension.
But we're getting close to the apple scene, right?
We love that scene. So, you know, by this point, we realize that, well, we learn a little bit more about Caecilius' backstory. He was arrogant and lost. He started questioning the Ancient One and left Kamar-Taj with his disciples. At this point, we end up back in the library, which is a pretty pivotal scene because we see for the first time the Time Stone, which will have very huge repercussions for us down the line. And that's when we discover that it can manipulate time, which brings us to that apple scene.
Mm-hmm.
So good. I don't know why. I like the simple things. We're just watching you go like broop, 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 broop.
Yeah. I want someone to just loop it so it just goes back and forth like a DJ thing. Like, yeah, exactly. I'm riding, I'm not.
Well, and so, and this gets into where, and then he gets busted in by Wong and Mordo, and they're like, do you know how dangerous this is? And he sort of flips to the back of the book and sees like kind of like all the warnings. And he's like, they really should put the warnings at the front of this. Because it's so good. He's like, well, you know, I started reading it and I was down to make an apple go in and out. And now you're telling me that there
you're telling me I can't make an apple go in and out now? Forget it.
There
I'm
are
done.
Massive
I'm surprised he didn't quit right there.
He was like, well, this is it.
Yeah, if I can't make this apple rot, forget about it.
Flips the table, I'm out. Yeah.
And at this point, this is when we as viewers get the full backstory to everything about the great Sorcerer Supreme, the origin of Agamotto, really how all these sanctums were created in different places of power. We have in Hong Kong, London, and New York. Kind of like Fashion Week.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Right? I like that.
Where all the sanctums are.
So what you're saying is that Fashion Week is protecting us from dark forces.
Absolutely is.
I never thought of it that way.
I really never thought of it that way, but I like that.
I could have sworn I saw his cloak on the runway.
If people don't walk in silly outfits, we're doomed.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm on board now.
Capes are back in
fashion. I was not on board until now.
Well, maybe that's how, like, you know, the people who protect those sanctums are able to sort of like assimilate around them. Right. Like, well, everybody's wearing a weird cape. It's Fashion Week.
Exactly.
So
there you go.
No one's questioning their odd costume.
Marvel, call us. We got ideas.
We got a movie for you.
But this sets up for a pretty big action sequence.
Yes.
So what happens next, Adam?
I believe you're speaking about the attack on the New York Sanctum. While Strange is there, or he has to jump through, they attack to get the eye, right? And then he has to jump through New York and they chase after him there. And big fight, lots of magic being thrown around, sling rings, a firing aplenty. And this is where we get our introduction to the movie's most entertaining character, the Cloak of Levitation.
I was going to say the cape.
Yeah. So obviously, again, for those who read the comics, a big, big thing from the comics, Strange, this is how Strange flies. It's got a character of its own, and it's on full display in this fight. It's got a lot of personality in the way, not only that it fights the enemies that are facing Strange, but also in the way that it treats Strange a bit. They have a bit of a antagonistic relationship at first because the Cloak knows better about this whole world than Strange does. And so we get this big fight and it happens and it's fun. And it's, you know, you got people running on the ceiling. You got all kinds of crazy stuff going on. Is this where my favorite, I want to get to my favorite line. It's later. But one of my favorite lines happens in this scene, I believe.
I think I know what it is.
I have a feeling it's
the one that I've written down.
It's not super crazy. Everyone knows what it is.
But this scene, have you ever had one of those nightmares where you're trying to run and you feel like you can't make any tracks?
And the hallway gets long.
Like
yeah.
That happened and I was like, oh God, I think I might need a little bit more Prozac today because I'm telling you, like this stressed me out the way a nightmare does. Yes. It's just like trying to run and you can't get any further away.
Yeah, that's me whenever I'm trying to exit the subway. Yeah. Where's the exit?
But this is also a really big moment because of what it reveals at the end of this fight, I guess, all the stuff about the Ancient One that Strange has learned comes out. And it's a really interesting attack for the movie to take that I think puts it like above some other movies in the genre in that, you know, this is like if you found out that Yoda got Me Too'd or something, you know, like this is about as bad a thing as there is in the wizarding world of Marvel, you know, to touch the dark dimension. And the Ancient One has been pulling her power from the dark dimension so she can stay alive and be eternal. And man, Mordo does not take it well. I mean, this is where we start to see the beginning of Mordo becoming disillusioned with this whole structure, this whole system that he's been a part of. And yeah, it's a big, big deal.
We also find out exactly what is going on with Caecilius and Dormammu and how this all comes into play. Basically, Dormammu is in the dark dimension where worlds really won't die. And we just pretty much find out that they're Caecilius is trying to find a way to just keep our world going so it doesn't expire.
They spun the wheel and, you know, dead family came up as the motivation for the villain. And this is this is something that we see a lot. You know, it's like, oh, well, I have to have eternal life because my family, you know, they died. And we saw it in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, too, with Kingpin. That was his whole motivation for everything. So it's a little pat. It's a little, I mean, I know they want to give these characters, you know, they want to give the villain a motivation and a backstory and all that stuff, but it's a little like, oh, okay, his family's dead and he wants to kill death, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I'll cop to that. It's been done a lot.
Yeah,
it was a bit of a cliche.
And I say this as someone who loves this movie, so please don't at me.
I mean, I have to say this leads into when, so during that epic fight scene, he gets stabbed. And so he decides to take himself to the hospital to see Christine.
Yeah.
And I love how she's like down to help, but also like, you're in a cult, right?
And this is, we get all kinds of cool astral projection sequences here where Strange is fighting one of the acolytes of Caecilius and in the astral plane.
Let's also give a shout out to Rachel McAdams. I thought she was a hoot here. I kept on rewinding the part where he just, you know, sort of like pops out of the astral plane and starts directing how to, you know, inject his heart. And her facial reaction was just priceless.
I love Rachel McAdams. She could have not been in this movie and it would have been the same story. You know, it's okay. Like, I guess they have to give him a love interest, but it could have been the doctor that he humiliated earlier or something like that. You know, like, I love Rachel McAdams again. And the character is from the comics, and so they want to bring the character in from the comics. But from a story perspective, I don't think she served much purpose. Sorry.
Yeah, but Adams is Hollywood, and she's pretty. So
that's
like,
right.
We all know how the recipe works.
I'm on board with that. You know, I like me some Rachel McAdams, both as an actor and in appearance. But.
I was just going to say this, though. When she popped out, it made me realize, is this the most pedigreed Marvel film there is? Because every lead actor, I think with the exception of Mads Mikkelsen, is either an Oscar nominee or an Oscar winner.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
Think about it. Tilda Swinton, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Benedict Cumberbatch, and Rachel McAdams.
That's a really good point.
All Oscar nominees. It is the most pedigreed of the Marvel movies. Am I not mistaken?
No, I would say you're probably right. I'd have to do some hard research, but I would say numbers-wise, one of them for sure.
At least per capita, because probably in some of the other movies where you've got literally everyone, you could probably cherry pick that, you know. But per capita, per actual characters, it's the most pedigreed.
So was Rachel Adams successfully able to fix him?
Well, she certainly was, but not before he has a conversation with the Ancient One. And this is a great scene. I actually love this scene a lot. I'm a fan of Tilda Swinton, controversy aside, and just this quiet moment between them.
Wait, that happens later.
Oh, well, forget it then.
You're jumping ahead.
God,
this scene, no, you don't. It's okay. There's a lot of overlap in this movie, but this is the scene where, because he's still fighting one of Caecilius's
dudes
and
disciples.
There you go. And he does the electric shock.
Yeah,
thing,
that
which
part
I was
cool.
Like, I love a good you know action moment where people are getting electrocuted.
And Rachel McAdams is freaking out as things are kind of just going haywire around her, like a scene from Ghost, the movie.
Indeed.
Well, Stephen Strange ends up speaking with the Ancient One in that scene you mentioned.
Now that happens. Sorry. Yes.
Well, so, I mean, I know what happens is, Strange goes back to defend the New York Sanctum, and then thinking that he's smarter than he is, sets up this mirror dimension, and Mordo immediately lets him know that that was a very stupid move, because Caecilius has a lot more power than him. Ancient One comes in to rescue them, and then she has an epic fall.
Yeah.
Like, epic fall. That's another one in this movie where I went like, oh, God. Like, that was aggressive.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal.
But to your point, Adam, it does take us to that lovely moment where Doctor Strange and the Ancient One are outside as time has sort of frozen, and she explains to him his greater purpose he choose to accept it. It's a good moment, though.
Yeah,
like
and it's just two really good I mean, they're both outstanding actors, and Tilda Swinton just brings that. The Ancient One is this otherworldly being, but also a human. You know, and you really, I think, in that moment, get the human aspect and all the, you know, pain and regret of passing on to the next life or whatever that comes with it in her performance here.
Well, the action from here shifts pretty much to Hong Kong.
Oh, yes,
as we end up in the Hong Kong sanctum.
With Wong.
With
Wong.
In
Hong Kong.
There you go.
Just poor Hong Kong. I feel like Hong Kong gets blown up, destroyed in lots of movies.
Because
like,
it looks cool on camera.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. Just that they, you know, they dealt with a lot of damage over there.
That's the monkey's paw curse. Hong Kong was like, I want to look cool. And they were like, yes, fine, but you'll get blown up in movies a lot.
Oh, this is where they just pretty much pull out all the stops.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So this is an all-out assault, and now a portal is opened above the sanctum to Dormammu's.
A space butthole, as we call it there in Marvel. No, it's true. All these movies have a space butthole.
Space butthole. It just sounds wrong.
Or a sky butthole, I should say. I'm sorry. That's better.
That sounds
space
really,
was the word that I, was really throwing
I,
you
Yeah,
right
you're
now.
Right. Yeah. It was change it to sky butthole, and it's suddenly so much better.
You got to have a sky butthole.
What happened to a good old wormhole?
But it looks like a sky butthole.
Oh, God.
Come on. I didn't make it up, okay? I'm just the messenger.
Okay, we'll go with it. So, for the sake of this conversation, I'm on
it. So Doctor Strange takes a deep breath and flies into the space butthole.
Exactly.
There you go.
As you have to.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this leads up to like my probably one of the best scenes in this movie.
It is the best scene. It's the absolute best scene.
Because you have this giant monster who is like, you think is this like infallible force. And he's like, I can't take repetition.
Yeah.
Like, he just like reaches that point.
Time.
He's like, this is too much for me.
Time does not exist in the dark dimension until Doctor Strange brings it there.
Well, it's funny. It's like you bring him to the mundane aspects of life, right? Like, well, that's what living is. It's reliving the same thing over and over again, right? Like the routine of being an adult. And so
it's so painful.
Oh, my God. It's so painful. And so it's so interesting to see that, I think, in this fantastical realm where, like, it takes the mundane action of repetition to drive this
to
being.
Drive an all-powerful demon to insanity.
It's all, see, some, I love the simple solutions to
but
things.
No, this is great. And let me say, like, so what happens basically is that Doctor Strange goes there, he says, Dormammu, I've come to bargain, and Dormammu's like, screw you, you're dead, and kills him, and then we find out Doctor Strange has set the time stone to the Eye of Agamemnon to roll time back, and just so they have to keep reliving that sequence over and over again. Doctor Strange dies over and over again, and this is, again, the first time that time has ever existed as a concept in the dark dimension, and it freaks Dormammu out. And I love this, because one of the problems that I have with a lot of superhero movies is that the answer to every issue seems to be to punch something. And if that doesn't work, then you punch it again. And if that doesn't work, then you squint your face really hard, and then you punch it, and then the problem is solved. And this is a straight up, you know, Doctor Who, Jean-Luc Picard logic trap.
Dormammu, I've come to bargain. Dormammu.
And that's the solution to the problem. And I love that it's that. I love that it's a logic trap and not a. I mean, there's fisticuffs in the film, obviously, throughout. But that the final solution is with the mind, with the power of the mind, is very good and very fitting for the character.
I agree. It was really, really clever. And if you look back, they actually foreshadowed all the themes of time from the very beginning. His watch had cracked when he first got into Kamar-Taj. So you sort of have an idea, okay, this is going to kind of fuck up with your head a little bit when it comes to time. But ultimately, Dormammu concedes.
He does.
I love the, so then, you know, he concedes, but what Doctor Strange wants is that he takes Caecilius and his disciples into his dimension.
Right.
And again, it brings back that joke that I love. So they're being sucked into the dark dimension. And he's like, well, I guess they should have put the disclaimer earlier on, because he stole the wrong pages. You didn't know the repercussions of your actions, my friend.
Dance with the devil, you're going to get stepped on. I don't know. That didn't go anywhere. But you know what I mean.
But yeah, I mean, you watch those guys get like sucked up into the dark dimension, and it has that validating superhero movie moment where you're like, yeah, what? Bad guys, later, annihilated. You need that.
Yeah. You do. But from there, things can take a little bit of a weird turn, because Mordo is now completely disillusioned with all of it.
Well, that's the post-credits scene.
Oh, yeah, we're not there yet. But so, question, you referred to it as the Time Stone earlier. Isn't it called the Infinity Stone in the end of the movie?
No, it is an Infinity Stone.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah. Ignore me. I know nothing.
It's okay.
Because I was like, wait, what? But I'm still getting the Infinity Gems. It's taken me a little while. But yeah, and he puts it back, right? You know, he's like he relinquishes the power for that time and puts it back. And he's trying to convince Mordo at this point, like, why the Ancient One did the things that she did. You know, he's trying to put some rationale behind it. But we don't really know if Mordo believes that at this
point. Absolutely.
You know, we're not
and
sure if he's
bought
in.
Away from them, like, right there.
Yeah. He does.
You know, you realize, well, there's a schism happening over here, which sets things up for two interesting scenes after this. One is a mid-credit scene, the other is the post-credit scene.
Well, just the final thing I want to call out is this is when Strange takes his mantle as Sorcerer Supreme, and we get that final shot of him in front of the Window of the Worlds.
Yes.
A very classic image from the comics, and, you know, as for the comics fans among us, we was just like, you know, because Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum is one of the iconic comic book HQs, and it's really cool to see him in his full glory in costume and all.
And I feel like that shot, even though they say it at the end, you will see Doctor Strange will return. Right. That shot implies that. So, like, the visual of it, you're like, oh, there's more to cut. Like, there's more Doctor Strange story here, which I liked that it was conveyed so well in that ending shot.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, I'm sorry. Now credits scene.
Credits.
But it does certainly tease a lot of interesting stuff to come in the first mid-credits scene.
Yes.
Which involves Thor.
You're asking me. Thor,
yeah,
yes.
I was like, involves
this
Thor.
Also known as a scene that they basically lifted from Thor Ragnarok Whole and put into Doctor Strange. I believe it was actually directed by Taika Waititi when they shot it.
Okay.
So, it's fun. And it's not, I mean, it sets up more from Thor, and it's funny. It's just a fun character moment. And it's just, you know, so many of these post-credit scenes are super portentous and like, well, dun, dun, dun. You know, and this is just a fun little bit, and again, leans into what we've talked about before, which is Thor's and Chris Hemsworth's comic chops.
Well, and the
chops.
I love the beer. The beer, it keeps refilling itself.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. You can see just how happy he was.
And Thor's like, all right, I'm into this. Yeah. Can I bring this back with me wherever I'm going?
But the second scene isn't quite of the same tone.
Speaking of portentous scenes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, but we do get one of those in this movie, man. For sure. Oh, poor Benjamin Bratt.
Yeah.
He gets all that magic ripped out of him. But that's where we see, man, Mordo, he looks pissed.
Yeah.
And that closing line where he was like, there's too many sorcerers. You're like, oh. And you're like, again, you're like, shit is going to go down. Yep. So excited
for it.
Well,
that's exactly the transformation that Adam mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Sort of about where this is going to go.
I just really think that's cool. It's like so many times with villains in these movies, it's like you get about the first act, you get to get introduced to them and their motivation, blah, blah, blah. And here we've had a whole movie to basically get introduced to this person who's going to be, I have to imagine, one of the main antagonists in Doctor Strange 2, which has already been greenlit. Or at least, you know, moving forward in the Doctor Strange side of the MCU.
Well, that's the movie. A lot of really good stuff here that we can really kind of chew on.
Oh, so much.
Lots of really good scenes.
Yeah.
Lots of very memorable scenes. Which one was your favorite, Megan?
Oh, man, there's a lot. I mean, I agree with Adam's earlier sentiment around when we first see the astral plane, and it's just visually so compelling. But I have to say, I really think it's the simple comedic moments that happen in this movie, because it takes all the fantastical elements that are happening around you and grounds them in still like that human interaction. So, I mean, I would say for me, my favorite scene is that when he is in the hospital with Christine.
I'm going to have to vanish now.
What?
Keep me alive, will you?
To me, I just like that. It brought a lot for me on that scene. So I'd say that's my favorite.
Yeah, no, I mean, the astral plane thing is the biggest for me, just because of how they went for it.
What did you just do to me?
I pushed your astral form out of your physical form.
What's in that tea? Psilocybin? LSD?
It's just tea. With a little honey.
They didn't shy away from like weird psychedelic imagery or, you know, things like that. It was like, we don't need to be grounded. This is magic. This is what it is in this universe. And they just went all in on that. And so that to me was the best part. Beyond that, again, I think it's the final scene just because of the way it was handled and that he outwitted Dormammu instead of destroying Dormammu, you know.
I agree.
What about you, Alexis?
Yeah.
Well, no, I love the scene in the New York Sanctum, that sort of big fight that they had over there where we meet the Cloak of Levitation and sort of have this trippy tour throughout the Sanctum, and you get those three doors with like TV dials on them, which I just love that whole idea.
That was very cool, yeah.
Oh, I love that part where one of the disciples gets put out into the desert and she's running, and then all of a sudden it just the door just disappears, and it's like, oh, that's disappointing. It's like, well, what do you do now?
Yeah, I guess you're in the desert now.
You live here now.
Yes, exactly.
What about best lines? Which one stuck out for you?
Oh, man. I mean, mine is, it's from the trailer, so I can't really claim to be original, but it's the exchange between Caecilius and Doctor Strange in which he calls him Mr. Doctor.
It's so good.
It's a little who's on first, which feels kind of out of left field in the middle of this thing, but I love that. I love that they were just like, we're going to throw a wacky little bit of banter in the middle of this serious action scene. So that's it for me.
I have two. One that's more serious and one that definitely is comedic, but I think when Mordo and the Ancient One are discussing whether or not to let Doctor Strange in.
We never lose our demons, Mordo. We only learn to live above them.
And I just thought that, like, there was something about that that was very, I don't know, prophetic, and it sounded great. But the other one that I really like is when you have Steven and Wong are in the library.
Oh, you know, people used to think that I was funny.
Did that work for you?
And it was just like that. So I was like,
Wong,
oh my
God, is a great, great foil.
Oh, he's
for
so good. And it made me think of how many times have I laughed at like my boss's joke and been like, yeah, that's great.
Because like, that's the thing. I think with people like Tony Stark or with people like Doctor Strange, there's always those, everyone's just always charmed by like, oh, you're such a witty, charming rapscallion. And Wong is like, no, just completely. And he's just like, no, I'm not here for that.
And he's so good. Poker face. He's mastered the art of that.
Oh, so good.
He's amazing.
That Wong poker face.
Can I cite one more favorite line?
Absolutely. Megan had two, you get two.
Yeah,
okay. The Ancient One speech at the end about death.
You'd think after all this time I'd be ready. But look at me, stretching one moment out into a thousand, just so that I can watch the snow.
The way she delivers that line in that moment, it's just really, you're just like, oh.
That's a good one. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, she can read the phone book, really, and she would be pretty awesome.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, which again made the controversy all the harder to deal with.
I know.
That's true.
Alexis, did you have a favorite line?
Well, since we're going for two, I am going to go with a
two. Do it.
As well,
do
absolutely.
It.
The first one is, I am changing my Wi-Fi password to Shambhala.
What's this, my mantra?
It's the Wi-Fi password. We're not savages.
Yes,
yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Which I thought really spoke to the tone of this movie and how they hit it. It wasn't quite as goofball as Thor Ragnarok, but it wasn't as straight-faced as, let's say, Captain America, Winter Soldier. I think it walked that interesting line, which was kind of Iron Man-ish. It had a bit of that humor, but it was his own little beast, and I sort of thought that this encapsulated that. And the second is really more of a running gag, but I just love how Wong really had just one name and how Doctor Strange just would not let that go.
Oh my God.
You know, like Adele or Drake or Bono. And then there was that scene where he's in the library trying to sort of sneak in. Doctor Strange is trying to sneak in, and you actually see Wong with his headphones on, and he's listening to Single Ladies.
Oh my God, it's so good. Because he makes a reference to Beyonce earlier, and Wong has that stone face, and he's like, come on, Beyonce? Yeah. You don't even know Beyonce? Like, let's go. Like,
and then later, he's listening to Beyonce.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the director a bit. So this was directed by Scott Derrickson, pretty much really a newbie to the MCU, a little bit of an untested commodity when it comes to superhero movies. What did you guys think about the way he had approached this movie?
I don't know that there's a ton of Scott Derrickson in this film. I think that some, like, you know, the imagery when it comes to the hands being crushed. I mean, Scott Derrickson is a horror director.
I was going to say, I was like, if you look at his, sort of his history, this is an interesting leap for him considering kind of the other areas
and
he
was
in.
I think that this, to me, this movie falls very squarely in the area of Marvel movies being a producer's medium and no offense to Scott Derrickson, who I'm sure is very skilled, but you know, Kevin Feige needs someone who knows how to put a movie together, but the vision comes from Feige and from Marvel. And I think, to my mind, this movie is that. You know, Scott Derrickson is very competent and he knows how to shoot a scene and the pace was good and the structure and all that stuff. But the vision, I think, feels very, I don't want to say factory, but, you know, it feels like it comes from the Marvel side rather than Scott
Derrickson's
side.
It wasn't really a director's vehicle.
Right.
So to speak.
Well, and he was a writer on the film also. And so I think that that's interesting to look sometimes in the other movies in the MCU too, where the director had a, to your point, Adam, almost like a heavier hand in other aspects, like so that it became a more like cohesive collaboration between all the parts rather than saying this is the vision of one individual that's coming to life.
And I think that's what makes the MCU so cohesive, because you see that consistency across, which is tricky to have when you when you're tapping so many different directors and visionaries to handle all these properties and sort of bring them together, have a connective tissue. So, you know, in many ways, that was a success that this actually worked, because it didn't really stick out in a way that made it feel like it didn't fit with the overall MCU. Well, speaking of where things are heading, the real purpose of 22 Days of Marvel is to see how all of this sort of starts teasing things into Avengers Endgame. And, you know, this movie was a bit of a whopper in terms of how that could impact Endgame.
Sure. I mean, anytime we get introduced to a Infinity Stone, the link is right there staring us in the face.
How intrinsic is this particular stone to what happens?
Obviously very intrinsic if you've seen that other movie, Infinity War.
I was like, which other one? That
little movie with just
Thanos makes a lot of use of the time stone in the climactic scene. So big piece of the pie.
But so then how do you think this set us up for Endgame, though, too? Like, because I think that's what's hard is you think about, oh, how this set us up for Infinity War, but also was there anything in here that led us to Endgame? You know, to
it's
what
hard
we think
to say,
because, right?
You know, Strange says in Infinity War, you know, we've got that big moment where he says, like, I looked at a billion possible futures and we lose in 99% of them and there's only one where we win. And so how much he's going to be involved in that, given that he got dusted at the end of Infinity War, I would imagine isn't probably that much. But
is anyone ever really dead?
I mean, the other
thing
is, I would say Doctor Strange was also our first introduction to the quantum realm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because we see that in his travel through the planes. And will that play a role in how Thanos is defeated, given that Ant-Man survived when he was in the quantum realm at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp? Like, it's possible.
Well, there are a lot of theories that, you know, the time stone would be pretty crucial to how things are resolved.
Sure.
A lot of photos have surfaced from the set of Endgame, and a lot of fans have pointed out that in some of these photos, the original Avengers are wearing their old costumes from the Battle of New York. So it has
led to
some theories out there that there could be an element of time travel in this movie, if those theories are to be believed. But then again, we need to take them all with a grain of salt. The Russos have said in interviews that theories out there aren't necessarily wrong, but then again, they could be throwing us off the trail. So you'll never know. But the bottom line is we have the time stone here, and it is going to come into play in a very, very big way.
Yeah, maybe. I'd imagine to come back from something like the Snapchat in Infinity War, that time and time travel are going to have to be some sort of element.
Right. I hope the whole movie is just then things happening, and then like in the first 5 minutes they get the time stone and they rewind, but then Thanos gets it back and then he rewinds and then they get it back and they rewind. So it's just the same 5 minutes of movie for 2.5 hours.
So it's Thanos, I've come to bargain.
Exactly.
The whole movie.
Absolutely.
And the whole thing happens in a rewind machine in a Blockbuster somewhere. Oh, that was a bad joke. I'm sorry. I had to get it out though.
No, Blockbusters are hot right now because of Captain Marvel.
Apparently, they're real hot.
Yeah.
Well, now we get to the part where we find out exactly where this film ranks in the overall scheme of things. We've polled some people here at Sci-Fi to tell us exactly what they think about this movie, how it stacks up against all the others in the MCU, and we will let Warvis fill us in on that.
Doctor Strange ranks number 12 out of 21 in Sci-Fi Wire's official MCU rankings. It ranks just ahead of Ant-Man and just behind Captain Marvel.
Number 12.
No, that works for me.
It does?
Yeah. I like this movie a lot, but I think the issues that people tend to have with it is that it fits the mold. It does not break the mold. It's just like, this is not typical, but this is a bog standard origin superhero story with the same kind of arc, which I don't necessarily mind, but if you do, I could see that knocking it on for some people.
I agree. I think it's a really fun standalone movie, and like I said earlier, my favorite. But if you look at how essential it is to all the other films in the MCU, it's no Civil War. You know, it's no Black Panther. I think that's a fair ranking. Yeah.
That's valid. I'll give you that. You know, it's hard because it's like there's so many movies, so you start to think of like what your top five are, but then you remember these other films and things just start like sliding down the scale.
I mean,
more
honestly,
and more.
I would probably rank it higher myself just because I really enjoy it. Like when it was on Netflix streaming, I would just pop it on and have it playing all the time. And like, can't say that I would do that for every Marvel film. So I would probably rank it higher. But I understand why it's at number 12.
Why the collective has deemed it slightly lower on the list. I get that.
Any closing thoughts here as we gear up for Endgame?
I'm just really curious. I again, given that he got snapshot, I don't know that Strange is going to play a big part in this one, but I'm glad that there is a Doctor Strange 2 coming. I'm glad that we're going to be returning to this universe because I think it doesn't get enough credit. I think it's a lot of fun.
You know, I agree. I think coming out of that movie, I was like, oh, I'm going to get more of this? I'm very excited. And I personally, again, I just, my whole stance on the MCU is I love the standalone movies. Yep. I think that they get really deep into one character's story and lineage, and that, for me, is always going to bring me into a film. So I enjoyed this movie, and sometimes when people hated on it, I was like, oh, come on, though. Yeah. It's got some great stuff going for it.
Exactly. Well, we'll all find out soon what Doctor Strange's fate is when Avengers
Endgame.
You almost
said Dr. Fate.
I was about
Strange.
To say Dr. Yes. Fate. You
totally different
it.
Character.
You
yes.
completely caught that. Yes, I've been reading a lot of DC. And
how dare you?
Absolutely.
Don't you know Endgame is coming?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what's coming up next in the 22 Days of Marvel podcast? What's our next movie?
Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Guardians of the Galaxy Dose.
But that is a wrap for us here. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. If you like what you heard, subscribe to our podcast wherever you podcast. There are still more episodes to come as we count down 22 days of Marvel. And hey, if you missed earlier episodes, you can still catch those too. We got you covered. From all of us here at Sci-Fi, that's it for now. We will see you on opening day at Avengers Endgame.